On today's episode, we have a great conversation with Drs. Don and Carrie Cole, who founded the Center for Relationship Wellness and have worked with the world-famous Gottman Institute for nearly two decades. They offer some helpful tips for couples on ways to connect emotionally and then build on that relationship connection. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection. The doctors are in. I'm psychologist Liz Hale, along with Professor David Schramm, and we are dedicating our life's work to bringing you the best we have in marital research, along with a few tips and tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. We have really special guests with us in the studio today, Drs. Don and Carrie Cole with the Gottman Institute. They actually founded also the Center for Relationship Wellness, based on the 40-plus years of scientific research of Dr. John Gottman. Welcome to the show, Don and Carrie.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Such an honor having you. Can we please start with the multiple hats that you wear? Maybe we'll start with the Gottman Institute. Please tell us, what do you do exactly? Carrie, can we start with you?
Sure. I am the research director for the Gottman Institute. That means that I run the Love Lab in Seattle. So
the Love Lab is still going?
Yes, it is.
I didn't know.
It's different than it was at the university, but yes. And it's still going. Plus, you run research programs, testing effectiveness of interventions and so on throughout the world.
So, yes, we've got several studies currently going on.
I remember hearing about one of them. Isn't it infidelity recovery?
That's correct.
That is so cool.
We're also doing an outcome study. So basically looking at the effectiveness of the Gottman method of doing couples therapy. We like to back everything up by research. So we want to make sure that what we're doing is actually effective and working for couples.
Oh, that's so fun to hear about the Love Lab.
Yes.
It's fun to watch, too, when we have people in there. The Love Lab is actually part of our counseling office in downtown Seattle. And when Carrie is testing couples and they've got wires on their face and all over their bodies, it's all done by Bluetooth now rather than wired connections to the computer. So the high tech is higher. But
there are still wires and electrodes.
There's still visible wires to see and sticky things to put on people's skin. And because we know the physiology part that gets involved when people are relating to one another is just so huge. It's such a predictor of what's really going on. Can kind of like see under the skin, if you'll forgive the pun.
Yes. Isn't that exciting? That's what makes Dr. John Gottman's work what it is.
Yeah, yes.
That's certainly one of the unique things that he and Bob Levinson brought to this field was to really take a look at how the interactions affect our hearts, our deep emotions that we can't hide.
No, that's right. Oh, I think that is thrilling. Don, what is your role, please, with the Gottman Institute?
I am the clinical director. So I'm in charge of our programs that train therapists throughout the world and approve therapists for certification in our methods. Also work with helping our therapists who are certified in Gottman Method become trainers themselves. So help interview and support them so that the things that we do will continue beyond our own, beyond Julie and John's role and even beyond ours, because I think what the Gottman Method and Gottman Therapy has contributed to this field is worth having a continuation into the future. So it's a big part of what I do. And also handle problems and so on, like any clinical director does.
Yeah, of course. I became a certified Gottman therapist, and that training was unbelievable. It really helped deepen my seasoning as a therapist. And it's interesting how many couples that call are looking specifically for someone Gottman trained. The word is really out in our society.
Yes, it is.
Good to hear.
Yes.
Yeah.
So nicely done. I love on your website, you echo my beliefs. Some couples struggle with some problems in their relationship at some point. We get stuck, right? Mm-hmm. There must be a reason why you don't say all couples, but a significant amount of us do get stuck at times when we have blind spots. We need a little insight and education. Is there a reason why you say some couples, some of the time?
Well, we know that there are couples that John and Bob and others discovered in those early days of the research that they just labeled the masters of relationship. They seem to know instinctively. Maybe they learned it well from their own families of origin or whatever, but they seem to know how to turn toward each other effectively, how to manage their conflict effectively, how to build a shared meaning system. Those are kind of the three things that we know makes couples function, that sort of positive friendship, conflict management, effectiveness, and building shared meaning through life. And some couples just seem to know how to do it. And even they still have problems. They still have differences, right?
Yes. And then there are some times when those couples also encounter something that they don't negotiate very well. Mm-hmm. So they can use, and, you know, hopefully they'll get into some assistance quicker and get themselves back on track faster.
Yeah. One of the things that I've heard about that you guys talk about is something called marathon therapy. I'm not a therapist. I'm a family scholar and a family scientist. And so when I hear the term marathon therapy, I can't help but think of this, you know, 10-hour session, you know, 30 days straight of 10 hours a day or something. It's probably not that. But tell us a little bit about marathon therapy.
It's not really that.
So marathon therapy, also known as intensive therapy, different therapists maybe set it up in different ways. Don and I set it up where we work with one couple for 3 days, 6 hours each day. We are actually going to start a study on the effectiveness of marathon therapy soon because we really think that it's going to change the way that we do therapy. You have time. In traditional couples therapy, you have maybe sometimes as little as 45 minutes. If you're lucky, you have 90 minutes. And couples typically come in and they process the latest fight, and then it's time to go. And so it's very frustrating for both the couple and the therapist because it feels like you're spinning your wheels. You know, and sometimes you become more effective at processing fights, but we really need to be able to do more than that. There are sometimes, you know, some underlying issues that never seem to, that we never get to. So we want to be able to delve into that deeply, which is what we're able to do in our marathon work with couples. Mm-hmm. So it's really can change the trajectory of the relationship going forward.
So I have always believed, Don and Carrie, that an hour-long session is a great way to feel like a bad therapist.
Yes.
You know, so it's the beauty of private practice of being able to do extended sessions. Mine are 2-3. Sometimes they go into 4 hours. Mm-hmm. So I am all about your marathon work. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, well, it kind of got derailed a little bit with COVID. We had started some training, some of our therapists, in using the math to standardize what we're doing so it can be properly assessed through research. And it kind of got a little derailed with COVID, but we're cranking that back up.
Everything got derailed. I'm assuming you see couples in person. For these 3 days, they come to Seattle.
Historically, that's been true. In my work with them, I would have them come through the Love Lab, so they would do an entire day of assessment and then a 3-day marathon. So it would be a total of 4 days. But with COVID, we have learned that we can actually do therapy online, and it's been fairly effective. So we are giving people the option of either online or in person.
Well, and that's also kind of one of the silver linings of this COVID cloud
Yes.
Is that we've been able to develop online assessment tools that are new, and they're still growing in terms of their power, to do a lot of what has historically been done in the lab can now be done in a clinician's office through technology. So COVID has sort of moved us in that direction, and it's really cool what's happening.
Do you two sit with the couple? Both of you sit with the couple that come to see you? Or Carrie, do you ever visit with the wife or vice versa?
So either we will do it both ways. Sometimes I work with a couple, sometimes Don works with a couple, and there are some couples who want both of us to work with them together. And so if they request that, we will do that, which is really awesome because I get to see the way Don works, right? When you're in a therapy office, even when you're married to a therapist, you don't know exactly, you know, how their style and how they work together, how they work independently even. So he comes up with things that I wouldn't think of, and I think I come up with things that he wouldn't think of. So it's like, wow, that was really cool. Yeah, Carrie, I would have never done that.
Carrie has such great intuition with clients that I can rely on that. And then, now I start thinking about it. Yeah, you're right. But she, her intuition is very fast and very accurate. And that makes it fun to work with. We do have a little basic one style difference in that I tend to let couples maybe ramp things up a little bit more than she does. So sometimes she's ready to jump in, and I'm saying, "No, let's let them go. Let's see what they do with this."
I want to watch this.
I think I learned some of that from John, the professor, who says, "Hey, we'll just watch and see what happens," rather than intervening. So we have a little bit. We have differences about the way we do things sometimes, but I love it when we are able to do that. Obviously, it's more expensive to the client if they're having to pay for both of us, so that does factor in. But we like it when we get to do it.
Yeah, I think that is really marvelous. It's a little tricky as a female therapist. You know, I bring my gender into the room, right? My background, my religion,
right?
And so I'm often saying to the husbands, I know you're outnumbered. That doesn't quite seem fair, but I'm going to do my best to really hold both of you for the safe place, keep you in a safe place. So I think it's pretty cool when you offer both.
Can I just make a follow-up comment to that, Liz? Because I think that's...
Please.
I think it's not just that more often than not these days, the therapist or psychologist is female. That's becoming more true. Looking at our graduate programs and so on, and that's fine. But sometimes our theories throw us off because they're really kind of developed from a perspective that sometimes alienates males. And sometimes we're just kind of looking at them through a lens that makes it harder. Typical thing about that is talking about anger as a secondary emotion. Well, to a lot of men, anger is not a secondary emotion. It's a primary emotion.
It's real. It's primary.
And neurologically, it's real.
Yeah.
It has a very different neurological signal than other emotions. So those who say to a man, oh, you're not really angry, you're really sad. That's... A little bit negative. So
he just walked out the door.
At least maybe emotionally. He did. And so I think there is some of that that makes it harder sometimes for men to connect with therapists. But it's not always just because male therapists can do the same thing, sort of operate out of those same theories that sort of and I'm not saying women don't have anger and men don't have sadness. Of course, we do. But I do feel that sometimes those shifting emotions around like that does kind of invalidate people's experience, and especially men. So I'll just throw that in there as my sort of my complaint of the day.
And I wonder along those lines if that's why some men, some women don't really want to go into marriage therapy, right? Sadly, it still has a bit of a negative rap.
Yes. And there may be some, you know, there's always a fear that the therapist may side with one person over the other one, right? And a lot of times people are wanting to bring their partner to therapy for the therapist to fix the partner, right? Fix them. There's something wrong with them. So that would also make the other a partner reluctant to want to come in, right? The beauty about Gottman method, from my perspective, is I kind of joke about this, is that usually the female partner brings the male partner in, kind of reluctantly in for therapy. And by the time we get to the end stages, the male partner is dragging the female partner in. She says, "No, I think we're good." It's like, "No, I think we need to go." So I think that this method is validating for men.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in.
Don, you say that the number one strategy for couples to improve their relationship, then you did a webinar recently, I'm really anxious to see, are stress-reducing conversations. Can you tell us a little bit about that, or even model it for us right here on Stronger Marriage
Connection?
You want
to do it right or do it wrong, Carrie?
Would you like for us to do it right or wrong, or both?
Yes.
Well, okay, just briefly before we do, the idea really came out of some research that Neil Jacobson started at the University of Washington. Uh-huh. And when he found that there was a high relapse rate in a program that he was doing for couples, so he wanted to improve the program by finding out what couples were doing from his program that worked. To his dismay, he found out they weren't doing any of it. All the successful couples and the relapsed couples were saying the same thing, which is, we don't really do that stuff. It didn't really work for us. But what they did discover is that the couples who had maintained positive change had on their own developed this style of dealing with external stress, not being so great about talking about what's inside the relationship necessarily, but more about what's going on outside and finding their partner an ally, a support, a friend. Mm-hmm. In dealing with those external stresses. So he was telling this to John Gottman. They were colleagues. And John was excited. He said, "Hey, this is great. It's one of those things that we discover in science that we weren't looking for. You know, let's run with it." And Neil said, "No." "Why not?" "No, I didn't think of it." So John said, "Well, can we have it? We'll give you credit." And so we made it part, a big part of our program. And further research, primarily by a guy named Bodeman in Switzerland, on this concept has shown just how powerful a tool it is for couples maintaining connection and a sense of well-being. So it's really, a lot of couples do it already in one form or another. It's really the "how was your day, dear" conversation. So why don't you start?
Okay.
So this is not this is the way not to do it.
Wrong way.
Don't do it this way. Got it.
So Don, how was your day?
Terrible. Worst day of the year, by far. Worst day. Terrible day.
What happened?
Well, right after the staff meeting, you know, Jim comes into my office and he says, "You know, Tom went in to talk to Jerry." Jerry's the boss. Mm-hmm. "Tom went in to talk to Jerry right after the staff meeting. And Tom was telling Jerry how you're not qualified for the new promotion, the new territory and all that. And, you know, I think sometimes Jerry really listens to Tom. And I just felt really stabbed in the back. And I've been thinking about it all day. And it's terrible."
Oh, dear. Maybe Tom is just trying to look out for
No,
him.
No, Tom's trying to look out for Tom.
Oh.
Oh, come on.
I think you're overreacting here.
Oh, yeah, right. Right, yeah. You see the 6 inches blade in my spot? That's an overreaction.
Okay, so don't do it like that.
Don't do it like that. That's called siding with the enemy. We don't side with the enemy. All right. So let's try it a little better.
Okay. So, Don.
And, of course, I've never done it. I've never done it wrong, of course. Right? You probably haven't either.
No, we would never do something like that. Okay, Don.
Let's see it done the right way.
How was your day?
Awful.
Really? What happened?
Right after the staff meeting, I heard that, you know, Tom went running into Jerry's office telling him how I'm not qualified for the new promotion and the new territory that I got. And, you know, I know he's just trying to manipulate things to get it for himself. And it just, you know, it felt rotten. The whole day felt rotten because of this.
Yeah, I can see that that would be really upsetting.
It was horrible, you know.
So what's the worst part in this for you?
Well, it's scary to think that he might work. But, you know, when you ask it that way, I thought Tom was my friend. And now I feel like he just stabbed me in the back.
So you feel really betrayed by that.
Yeah, and like I can't trust anybody, you know, and that just really sucks. It's terrible. So that's a shortened version of how you do it better.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. So empathy and validation.
Asking good questions.
I've got your
back.
Just
being curious, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And avoiding the two don'ts. Don't problem solve. Oh, well, maybe you should go talk to Tom. No. And don't side with the enemy, what we demonstrated a moment ago. Those are the two don'ts.
Yeah, I like that. Compassion. Yeah, compassion and understanding. You're holding up the emotional mirror is what it seems like to me. And you're really, instead of trying to solve the problem, like jump in. But I love that. Yeah, just reflect. Be with them. Be in tune. Aim to understand and get curious, not furious, right?
And it also can help because I think that as we've role played this before, you know, the idea of betrayal as at the root of the pain really didn't come out until we kind of talked about it before. And like any role play, there's an element of truth somewhere in there where I have felt betrayed by someone I thought was a friend. I think most people have had some experience like that. And to have a listener that lets those emotions come out.
it's really hard to stay out of problem solving because we hate to hear our partner in that kind of pain, and we really want to take it away from them. But when we go into problem solving, we are giving a very different message, which is basically, I don't want to listen to this, or since you're too stupid to figure this out for yourself, let me tell you what to do. What I have learned in our relationship is that it is very helpful for me to say to Don, I need to have a stress-reducing conversation.
Yeah, put it out there.
It's like, so just listen, don't try to solve it for me, right? So my just saying that, I need a stress-reducing conversation, helps him understand, oh, I'm off the hook. I don't have to do anything but listen, right?
Yeah,
We also recommend couples try to create a ritual around this. So, you know, every day at 7:30, you know, the kids are up in their room and we have a glass of iced tea out on the patio. We're Southerners at heart, so it's always iced tea. And have our stress-reducing conversation. So it kind of clarifies what we're doing now. And we know those rituals of connection are really important. This is one of many, but.
So you were about to say something, Dave.
Yeah. I'm curious. Have you seen over time, have you seen couples come with, have the struggles differed? Have they come up with the same, is it the same issues? Or have you seen things evolve and say even the last 5-10 years with the topics that couples come to you with?
You know, in the last couple of years, couples have really come with COVID and being confined together, that's really brought. And I don't know if it's the you know, limited mobility and confinement that is the struggle, or if it just brings up all of the struggles that were there that they could kind of distance themselves from. And of course, communication is always, you know, we just have a hard time talking to each other and we can't get along. But usually underneath that, there's something else, something a little bit deeper.
But the, I think the general things like safety versus, you know, adventure. Let's just put that out there as a general difference. Well, you throw COVID in there.
Yes.
And it gets more intense. Or time together versus time apart. Or how about this concept that Gottman came up with years ago called turning toward, where we seek each other's attention and give it. Okay. Well, now we've introduced a device that is just so wonderful and powerful into our world a few years ago, and that's these smartphones.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen people turn away from each other and toward the television, towards the sports, towards whatever interest they have, and turn away from their partner. But these little devices are so powerful about creating your own little world. You know, we say our kids do it, but we do it too as let's say post kids. And, and, you know, we've seen the temptation, if you will, the process of turning away. So it's always a problem, but new things like the ubiquity of cell phones or Netflix, where, you know, she's got her shows, I've got my shows, and we separate our worlds even more because of these kinds of distractions. And I think that's something that we see. All that impacts our ability to be connected as friends. And so I think in coupling into therapy, the idea that it's always the fighting, it's always the conflict. No, it's not. Sometimes, a lot of times, what's really the struggle is we're just roommates. We're not, we don't talk, we don't laugh, we don't play, we don't kiss, we don't flirt, we don't anything. We raise kids and we don't do anything else.
Yeah, I've said in the past, I really like that because it starts with connection, hence, right, Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. And I've said in the past, lack of attention leads to loss of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it is, right?
Yeah.
Turning toward and giving that person our undivided, all-in mm-hmm. attention to have that connection, we see really as the foundation of relationships.
You know, you're right, Dave. And the fact is that most of the time, these little turning toward moments are so small, they don't even register in long-term memory. They're just stuff that happens. But even though the memory may not register, the emotions do.
Yes.
The feeling changes us, either toward our partner or distancing from our partner, just based on, hey, I really like this song. And Carrie says, yeah, I like that one too. Mm-hmm. The content goes away, but the feelings add up.
Stay.
Yeah.
Yes, they do add up. That emotional bank account,
exactly.
Like you're talking about. I appreciate going back to the marriage masters, marriage disasters. I always felt a lot of shame that as a therapist for 30 years, marriage therapist, that I didn't just out of the gate, I wasn't one of those marriage masters, you know, and I appreciate John Gottman telling us this group once here in Salt Lake City that he was not a marriage master either. Right. When they first started out, the two of you, how have you gone? What's been the trajectory of your course of marriage? Highs, lows, marriage master, marriage disaster at times?
I would say we do pretty well, but we are both in a second marriage. So this is our, you know, we have a blended family. And so both of us made mistakes along the way in our first marriages, I think one of the things that brought us together was our affection and interest for the work of Dr. John Gottman. That's actually how he came into view for me, was when he asked me if
I had... In a meeting, we were working together, but we were not a couple.
Nope. And he said, have you ever heard of a guy by the name of John Gottman? And I looked at him and it's like, heard of him? I have everything he's ever written.
John loves the story, by the way.
I have a box. It's a file box full of John Gottman's research journal articles that I Xeroxed when I was in graduate school. And I still have them with me, yellowed with age.
Even though we have all of them on PDF, I still have to carry that box every time we've moved. So
I can't.
But back to Liz's question. Sure, we've had moments of struggle and correction. Mm-hmm. I think what has been the best part of for us is knowing that things can't just fix themselves. You have to repair things. When things aren't feeling right, you have to fix it. And there are ways to do it. And so coming into this marriage, knowing that you have to try to repair things when they're feeling off track and that it's possible. I don't know that that makes us automatic masters. I think it was more learned knowledge.
Yes.
That, okay, we're going to do this. And so if something's bothering me or Carrie, I don't know how many times, hey, I need to talk to you about something, but it doesn't lead to that panic, like, oh my God, here we go, that you hear sometimes from folks when I hear that, because I know it's something that is important. We'll talk about it. We'll fix it.
Yeah, I think we work on repairing quickly. So something goes off track. And I probably do want to hold on to it, hold it in and not deal with it. But I know that that's not in our best interest. And to find a gentle approach. So I do have to wait. I tend to get flooded quickly and some triggers. So I do have to wait until I can bring it up in a gentle manner.
And sometimes...
I think it's really...
I think that's the beauty of these. That's the beauty of these tools, is it brings us such hope, right, across the board, no matter where we
after
are.
After you got involved as the research director and start talking about the power of that one little thing, that's gentle startup.
Yes.
I didn't realize, you know, just how great a change that creates. If the person bringing up a negative feeling or an issue will do it in a positive, gentle way, everything gets better. And you taught me that when we started working with the sliders and everything in the lab.
Yeah. Yes, that one little thing can make all the difference in the world. And just for your listeners' benefit, a softened startup has three parts to it. So when you bring up an issue, it's important to talk about how you're feeling about it. So I feel, and then about what situation, what happened. And that usually does not involve the word you. And then the third part, which is also important, is stating what you need in positive terms, not negative. So an example about that would be, I get annoyed when I see dishes in the living room. I would appreciate it if they would get picked up.
Right? And when people do that, historically, a person can still get defensive when it's brought as a gentle startup, but nothing works all the time.
Yeah.
But it's so much less likely. It's much easier. And the cool thing about this focusing on the startup is you have full control over it. It's like the serve in tennis. I used to play a lot of tennis. It's the only shot you have total control over. Everything else, you got to play what your opponent sends. But the serve, you set that up. You make the strategy. course, it's a different strategy. You're trying to make them miss when you're talking to your partner. You're not trying to, hopefully not trying to make them miss. So the idea, though, that you can formulate the startup in your own head, write it out if you have to.
I have written it out.
Because how a relationship or how a conversation starts is likely how it's going to end.
That's correct.
96% of the time. That's what we learn in the lab.
Yeah. I love that. That soft startup. You talked about responding to bids for connection. Are there any other little nuggets, I guess, of tips, practical things that you've learned from the science, the research, the love lab that you would offer couples?
So rituals of connection are really important. And what we learned is that couples who are connected to each other have a lot of rituals that they really enjoy doing together. It could be very simple little things like the way you wake up together or having morning coffee together.
Or doing Wordle in bed before you go to sleep.
So all of these little rituals that kind of bring couples together, and it's something that they can count on. It's the family traditions. So all those little traditions that are meaningful. It's like, this is who we are. This is about us. This is what we like to do. So it really is about we-ness, right? And that strengthens relationships, even in small, positive little moments in time, right? And one of the mottos of the Gottman Institute is small things often, right?
But I want to add another one to what Dave just asked, which is about knowing that there's always more to it when there's a disagreement or a difference. There's always more to it. There's something underneath it, especially when it's one of those things that we really just, why are we fighting for this? Why is this so important? Let me ask, what's the underlying need, the core value, the dream, the history? Let me, understanding precedes solutions. And so many times couples try to find the solution without the understanding, and it just tends to fail. So to take the time, say, why does this matter so much to you? Why is, calling your mom, maybe I think she calls her mom too often. I don't really, but maybe I did. Why is it so important for you to stay that close to your mom or to your daughter or whatever?
Excellent.
Let me find out more instead of just assuming that, well, that's not the way I want it, so it's bad,
Right. Yeah. I think even then in that example, Don, I think I've heard irritation is an invitation. When we get irritated, maybe even with a wife's habit or something, why do you keep, maybe first is to check in with myself, be like, why do I get so irritated with that habit or whatever it is? But I think understanding, our awareness of ourselves and what's underneath, I really like that. There's a core need, if it's safety or satisfaction or this connection, something that's there that we need to explore a little bit deeper.
Yeah. In terms of Gottman therapy, that a lot of times is the very heart of what we do, is helping couple have that conversation. Back to the marathon therapy, sometimes those conversations take all day.
Yes.
For one issue. And that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think you're right. I think you pinpoint some of that. What really is the heart of the issue? Then you can let the healing and the understanding and the compassion comes when we're aware and that understanding comes. Wow. Well,
and the honoring.
Oh,
you don't have to change to satisfy me. I can honor who you are and what you need, even though it may be different than me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hopefully she can do the same. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's how you get to that equilibrium that John Nash talks about in his mathematics about. You're seeking that equilibrium where things are balanced because we're both working for the good of the other.
Mm-hmm.
throw a little math in there just for the heck of it.
Yeah. That's great. I'm a professor, right? Well, Don and Carrie, Doctors Don and Carrie Cole, we are so grateful. Grateful for your time, for your great work at the Gottman Institute. As we wrap up, we like to invite you to think about a takeaway of the day from our conversation. We've talked about quite a few things. What do you think our listeners, what would you say is a takeaway of the day for each of you? Carrie, how about you start?
I suppose I would have two. One is to be gentle. Start gently. And the second one would be curious, openly curious with your partner.
I think
I would say, don't be afraid, or be proactive, be ready to engage your partner. How are we doing, baby? Let's maybe one of those rituals of connection. Every Saturday morning we'll have brunch, and we'll just spend some time talking about how are we doing.
I love that.
Repair what needs to be repaired, love what we can love, and laugh about all the funny stuff in between.
Yeah. Just got a ritual of connection, that check-in meeting. Take the temperature of your relationship to see where things are at. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Liz, what do you think? Mm-hmm. What do you take away from our conversation today?
You know, I would say that probably the number one complaint I hear from couples who come to me is that whole roommate syndrome you talked about, Don and Carrie. And I think that the message of the day, the takeaway, is that there is hope. There are simple skills we can learn, small things often, for better or for worse, that really contribute to a marriage and the betterment of it. What about you, Dave? What's your takeaway?
Yeah, thanks, Liz. It's been a rich discussion. I'm a big fan of the Gottman Institute and the things that have come out of that. The books, I think, are just top notch. I love the focus on connection. Our podcast is about connection, whether it's rituals of connection that you've talked about. I love the bids for connection. I'm a huge fan of that. So finding small things often, doing those little things to keep that connection strong, sure help when you engage in those conversations that need to be had. Hey, before we let you go, where can people find more information? Tell us a little bit about where people can find more info about you.
Well, they can go to gottman.com,
we have a
find a therapist,
link on there. And we're both on that in that system and we'll pop up. Also, it's easy to email us directly, Carrie@gottman.com, Don@gottman.com, real simple.
Nope. And,
it doesn't get much easier than that.
Yeah. Well, thanks again.
Yeah. Good luck to you with the Center for Relationship Wellness.
I love the
whole approach.
Pleasure to see you both. And
bless you.
Look forward to talking to you again sometime.
All right.
Great.
Please take care.
Thank you.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks so much. Thanks for coming on. Bye. And we will see you next time. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org. where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.